This programming is sponsored by Linscombe Wealth, a wealth management firm partnering with individuals and families dedicated to helping them build, preserve, and manage wealth by creating a customized plan to work toward achieving their goals. More at linscombewealth.com.
This is Party Politics, a podcast taped at our favorite saloon to prep you with the latest political chatter for your weekend barbecue or tailgate. I'm Jay Iyer, a political science professor from Texas Southern University.
And I'm Brandon Ruttinghouse, a political science professor from the University of Houston. Every week, Jay and I get together to talk about developments in the Lone Star State. And this week, we've got a bunch. But before we get to those, we wanted to extend our thoughts and our prayers to the victims of the shooting at Texas Tech University. This has obvious political implications. And as always, anytime this kind of violence takes place, there are moral implications as well. So what do you think about what this means, Jay, for the state and how we are to come back from this?
There's been a lot of sort of conversation about, you know, were concealed handgun license involved? You know, is this part of the campus carry issue? And I think it's important for our listeners to understand this really had nothing to do with that. This was a disturbed young man who, by law, would not have been able to have a weapon on campus. His parents had intervened, knew he was disturbed, contacted the police at Texas Tech and asked them to intervene because they were concerned he had a weapon and had some issues with controlled substances. And this is just a tragedy. We need to have a broader discussion about sort of mental health services on college campuses.
In the meantime, just figuring out what happened is critical and trying to find a way to stop it. You know, how did somebody like this who's not of age and who has mental health problems get a gun to begin with? And number two, how did they get it into the police station where he was able to shoot one of the officers? So lots of questions still to be on the table. But as it always happens, this is politicized in a way that is probably not that helpful. But at least it begins a dialogue where people can begin to ask questions about how to solve this. If it's not the case that you can fix people's hearts or their heads, at least we can try to figure out a way to minimize these kinds of events.
Well, Brandon, shifting gears to politics again, we've seen, I think, you know, we've had an ongoing conversation about this fissure in the Republican Party in Texas between sort of movement, social conservatism, and the business chamber of commerce, the center traditional elements of the Republican Party. And we've seen, I think, a pretty significant endorsement that took place with the Texas Association of Business. What's happened?
Yeah, it's a business versus Bibles again, right? As we've seen so often in the Republican Party here in Texas. In this case, we have the latest incarnation, and that is that the Texas Association of Business, who's a pretty powerful business association, is throwing its weight behind State Representative Cindy Burkett in her bid to unseat Senator Bob Hall in Senate District 2. Bob Hall was a Tea Party activist who's been in the state Senate for 3 years and has a fairly large district sort of in North Texas. To me, this is the come and take it moment for the battle of the Republican Party, because it is going to be the first time where we see business going up against the Tea Party. And whoever wins is, I think, going to set a pretty strong precedent for how these kinds of events are going to play out. This isn't the only race where we're going to see this kind of fissure. We're also going to see it in other races. But this is one where we definitely have two heavyweights going against each other and the organizations that are backing them at odds and trying to get what they want out of the electoral process.
The interesting thing to me about it is that normally when you have these sort of primary challenger races, the challenger is really the more conservative candidate. It's sort of the one backed by, you know, Empower Texans and the more socially conservative movement conservatives, the traditionalist wing of the party that's the incumbent. This is one of the rare times where you're seeing the business community really play offense. It speaks to this larger question of this battle between Speaker Strauss and Lieutenant Governor Patrick and kind of who is going to be running or controlling the Republican Party.
Well, speaking of inter-party warfare, Jay, Texas Governor Greg Abbott has complained to U.S. House members, especially the Texas delegation, that they might be in jeopardy of fumbling about $18 billion worth of Harvey aid requests from the U.S. Congress. He challenged the Texas delegation to keep a stiff spine and fight for funding. He was mad in part because he thinks that this isn't enough money allocated to Texas. So is this going to be effective for the governor? Is this something that is going to spur them into action, or is this going to backfire?
I think this is just the governor, I think, trying to reassert his authority, keep this a front burner issue. You've got a lot of disasters around the country right now. We've got the issues in Puerto Rico. Obviously, they're still trying to recover. We now have raging forest fires in Northern California with no end in sight. You've got recovery going on in Florida still. Texas needs to continue that and place that pressure. And Governor Abbott, I think, is just trying to remind the delegation that this is a number one priority. Texas is important and needs to assert itself.
Yeah, you know, you don't want Texas to be last in line for this. And the fact that our event took place before these others may make it sort of that it gets lost. I also think politically the governor really needs to have this go well for him to get reelected. And I don't think it's the only thing, but if things start to go south in terms of people's perception that he's not handling the Harvey relief efforts well, it could be problematic for a lot of people to go and back him at the polls.
Yeah, speaking of elections, the president's chief strategist, Steve Bannon, who's now on the outside, has decided that they're going to challenge in the Republican Party at its very core. He wants to run challengers against every incumbent in the Senate, except for one, and that would be our Senator, Ted Cruz.
Wow, this is odd because Cruz and Trump were so at odds during the campaign. And
that's right, Lion Ted. That's right.
Even to some degree during the president's administration. So the fact that Bannon here wants to, like, create this revolution is important and interesting enough, but the fact that Cruz is not involved is also a bit of a head scratcher. I think part of it is because Bannon is unhappy with Republican leadership. He wants to recruit people to run to essentially challenge Mitch McConnell. So he knows that Cruz and McConnell don't get along. So if there's anybody who in that group of senators is likely to follow Bannon into the fire against McConnell, it's probably Cruz.
Yeah, I also think there's sort of from a practical perspective, Senator Cruz, one of his biggest backers are the Mercer family. The Mercer family is also Steve Bannon's primary funder for both Breitbart and also they were a big part of the PAC that ultimately supported Donald Trump. And they're supporting this effort that he is now running. So they're not going to bet against themselves. Ted Cruz, for all of his pluses and minuses, has been pretty consistent on his views towards Donald Trump, particularly when it comes to this. I mean, remember, he pushed back on the repeal and replace bill that the president wanted. He's certainly not been a gimme to the president. And so I think this has more to do with the convergence of supporters rather than a sense that Ted Cruz is suddenly Donald Trump's kind of guy, because I don't think that's the case at all.
Yeah, I think it's going to be hard for Bannon to pull this off anyway. Trying to run somebody to the right of some of these senators is going to be really tough, especially Ted Cruz. And just finding the right kind of Trump acolyte and to who could fill that role is really not easy. I mean, Moore in Alabama is one example, but Moore was an established politician for a long time before Bannon got there to sort of give him his blessing. So it's hard to see that Bannon's going to really have a lot of success at this, but obviously this is a kind of inter-party warfare that we were talking about that's happening in Texas. It's certainly happening nationally.
Yeah, it would be like in Texas if Bannon decided to back, you know, Sid Miller versus Ted Cruz, as if that would be a real race.
I would love to see that happen.
Yeah,
it would be
fun. But speaking of sort of what's going on in here in Texas as it relates to that, is the big issue during the campaign obviously was this border wall. Well, Congressman Mike McCaul, the chair of the Homeland Security Committee in the House, has gotten $10 billion out of committee to fund a border wall.
Yeah, this is actually, I think, a pretty good leverage for the president here. If he can make it clear that he intends to follow through with this, then it's definitely the case that he can use this to have some leverage over issues that he wants to change in immigration with respect to DACA or with respect to green card reform or with respect to E-Verify. So if the pressure can maintain itself here and McCaul can be part of that, then this is, I think, a win for the president, even in the short term.
But Brandon, I thought Mexico was going to pay for it.
I also thought the wall was going to be clear
and huge and
sure.
Massive.
Actually, on this point, Jay, Representative Vella had introduced additional rules that suggested that the wall should be, quote, big and beautiful, whatever that means, right? That it also should be transparent, right? Literally see-through, as the president has said. So Vela's kind of trolling the president here, but they want to be able to suggest that they think that this whole thing is silly. But I do think that the president is able to use this as leverage in a really effective way if Congress is basically on the starting gate here with this and has allocated this money. It's going to be easy for him to use this as a leverage issue.
Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about these ongoing issues surrounding our Attorney General, Ken Paxton.
attorney general is in some hot water again. Just for some background here, Ken Paxton, who's the Texas attorney general, was indicted in 2015 on 2 first-degree felony charges and 1 third-degree charge of breaking state securities law by not registering as an investment advisor. Ken Paxton is now being investigated under bribery and corrupt influence laws for a gift from a CEO that was under investigation by the state for fraud. This CEO had given $100,000 to Ken Paxton's legal defense fund to fight these criminal charges, and the Kaufman County District Attorney is now investigating. There's a lot packed in here, and we can unpack this and talk about the trial and the prosecutor's back pay, but off the top of your head, what's your reaction to the Paxton latest issue?
Well, I mean, I think we need to start in the very beginning, right? So in the Republican primary back in 2014 when he ran, this issue was brought up that ultimately led to his initial indictment, and that was that he had coerced or was not entirely clear with investors for a company that he was selling shares for. This was brought up. He was elected anyway when people knew that there was an issue going on. He was elected in the general when people knew things were going on. He was subsequently indicted. He can't technically practice as the attorney general in terms of himself in court. This is sort of an ongoing issue with his ability to govern, and it has had no effect on his ability to be attorney general. He has no primary challenger, no one even talking about it among Republican primary voters or Republican primary officials, mm-hmm. I should say. And he has no declared challenger on the Democratic side. So you're talking about a guy who's under indictment already, who's had all sorts of issues crop up. He now has a potential bribery charge because he's got a legal defense fund set up, and that this anonymous $100,000 donation was made, and that donation happened to be from an individual who was in fact under criminal investigation by the AG's office. I'm sure that's just coincidental, but all of this is going on, and the interesting politics around it are nobody seems to think he's even remotely vulnerable.
Well, I'll say this. There's a long history in this state of politicians surviving these scandals. So we know from way back in the 1980s, Jim Maddox had similar indictments and also was able to survive as a Democrat. Kay Bailey Hutchison, when she was state treasurer, was also indicted, and she beat that. Governor Perry had multiple indictments against him with respect to abuse of power and still managed to keep his office. We have multiple members of the legislature who are being investigated or are literally on trial who will likely keep their seats. Part of it is that, obviously, gerrymandering has drawn these districts to protect these incumbents, so they're not likely to lose. But Texas is a very Republican state. I mean, like you say, we have an attorney general, right, who cannot practice in court. Obviously, it's not their only role, but the fact that that is something that doesn't bother voters suggests how politically polarized things are. The other factor here is that the trial has been postponed multiple times. This last couple of weeks, we've seen that the trial was set to kick off in sometime in December, but is likely to get pushed off because the prosecutors have asked for a delay because of some of the flooding with respect to Harvey. Has really kind of put a crank in a lot of attorneys and their ability to get ready for trial. So this won't be settled before the filing deadline. So we won't know resolution if it were the case that he was actually found guilty. Do you think then that you would find an opponent who would be willing to step up and challenge him? Because we're not going to know that, but that's really, I think, what's at stake here.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that the party that has been pushing the trial back, the party that has been moving the venue of the case, has always been Attorney General Paxton. He has sought to delay it. He has sought to move it. He has sought to sort of put it as far away into the future as possible. I think in large part because he's looking for leverage to either settle the matter or it simply goes away or past these sort of political points in time. I don't know if he gets convicted, what happens. It doesn't look like he's going to go to trial anytime before the filing deadline. Could he be vulnerable in the general election? Possibly. If he was convicted, you could certainly see a situation. But right now, you got to have someone running against him. Yeah. And the Democrats, I think, have proven sort of an ineptitude in terms of getting candidates to run statewide. And they just don't have sort of a slew of candidates lining up to even want to contest these kinds of issues.
Yeah, a generic distrust or dislike of a person doesn't matter if you can't vote for somebody else. So and a libertarian perhaps could result, from this, and they're going to put somebody on the ballot. So it could be that the libertarian gets that, but that's not a likely outcome to be able to unseat
Brandon,
the attorney general.
I want to ask you this because I'm surprised that Texas Democrats in general, other elected officials, we've seen, on the floor of the House, Congressman Al Green say he's going to file articles of impeachment against the president. You see a lot of pushback by congressional Democrats against the president. You just don't see that kind of thing from legislative Democrats, either in the Senate or in the House, whether it's Attorney General Paxton. What do we make of that? Why are Democrats so timid here? Yeah. You don't see it from local officials.
I think partly they're waiting for some kind of a final result here, and the fact that justice process takes so long is complicating the political process. There were rumors that Sam Houston, who is not related to the legendary general and president of the Republic, Sam Houston.
So we think. We don't know.
If it were me, I'd make that clear that I totally was related to him. But he may run, so it could be the Democrats do have somebody who is an alternative, but even that's going to be tough. I have to say, though, too, that honestly, in this, we have another element, which is complicating the state's ability to be able to prosecute these kinds of things when they happen. The most annoying thing about lawyers, Jay, as you know, is that they want to get paid.
And they are annoying.
And they are annoying, right, when they don't get paid. So we've had several court rulings where the prosecutors in this case have basically asked to get paid back pay for about to the tune of about $200,000. There have been court battles that at this moment suggest that they won't get paid because the judge who had issued that decree that they should get paid had overstepped their authority. The prosecutors are appealing to the Texas Criminal Appeals Court to make that next step. They argue that this would have a chilling effect on the state's ability to find competent attorneys to investigate these kinds of matters. So going forward, although this may not have an effect on Ken Paxton per se, is Texas set up well enough to investigate in a nonpartisan and ethically fair way these kinds of specific legal problems that our politicians get themselves into?
That's a great question, Brandon. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to answer that exact question and tell you why this is so important to you. So before the break, Brandon, you posed, I think, a pretty provocative question, is whether or not sort of structurally we're in place to really deal with these kinds of issues. And I think the simple answer, for me at least, is that we're not. I mean, we've got a system in place right now that's pretty antiquated. You've got politicians that, and I think we want to preface it with saying people have the right to be, sort of be considered innocent before we convict them in public opinion and before they go through the court system. So it's important to recognize that, but we don't have a system in place, I think, that can address these kinds of issues. And so you have a process that drags on for years and years, and it doesn't really sort of resolve the situation. And we don't get, I think, open and honest government as a result.
Everything is polarized and partisanized now. It's hard to be able to separate what is something that's officially illegal from something which is just a misunderstanding. So it's a really hard thing to do in prosecuting politicians. But I think in particular, Texas has these problems because we don't have firm enough rules on a lot of these dimensions. And as we've talked about before, Texas falls really low on these national standards about ethical government in terms of transparency, especially. So these difficulties, I think, complicate our ability to really get to the bottom line and get to the truth and to convince people that there's something potentially wrong here, because that's what government's about. It's about accountability, and we don't have that right now.
Well, that's it for another week. If you like this banter, make sure to check out our national episodes too. They're available every Friday, just like these episodes. As always, thanks to Houston Public Media, our producer Edel Howland, and special thanks to our engineer extraordinaire subbing in this week, the one and only Shannon, Little Miss Sunshine Harrison.
If you haven't already, subscribe to us on iTunes or from wherever you get your podcast. And while you're there, leave us a review. It'll help other people find the show. Follow us on Twitter with the hashtag PartyPoliticsPod or email us at PartyPoliticsPod@HoustonPublicMedia.org.
I'm Jay Iyer.
And I'm Brandon Rottinghouse. We'll see you next week. Speaking of inter-party warfare, we also have Senator. Why are there so many offices? Okay. To me, this is the Republican Party's come and take it moment for the battle of the Republican Party. I should say that again. That didn't make any sense. Frame, stop.
Can I pause again?
No. We'll finish. Todd lets his roll much more.
Todd just
lets it. Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay, let's do it.